gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with another edition of The Holohoke. You all know by now there were no gas chambers, I hope. Isn't that a kick? And here we believed all those terrible stories they told us about ourselves, that the prettier we were and the better behaved we became and the more intelligent we scored on tests, the darker the evil that hid behind our exterior of perfect sweetness. Boy, it's not too hard to break down a white person, is it? You know why that is? Because we have a conscience. Unlike any other race of man, we have the most developed frontal lobes, which is where the conscience resides. Yes, the Asians have very high frontal lobes. In fact, they might even have more in mass density than we have, which you would think would make them a people of conscience, but they aren't. Just take a look at their torture record, and you'll see that their emperors have had awful examples of whimsical torture just for the fun of it, boiling people in oil and stuff, the kind of stuff you hear in the Middle East. You don't hear that stuff coming out of Northwestern Europe and England and Iceland. Even America has a pretty good torture record, although we were infected at the beginning, because at the very beginning that this country was born, we were born with Jews. Jews had already infiltrated the Catholic religion and written that horrible book, the Malleus Maleficarum, by Wilhelm Spengler and Jacob Kramer. No, it's Wilhelm Kramer and Jacob Spengler. Well, you know just by the names Kramer and Jacob that you're talking about Jews. And in fact, they wrote a how-to-do-it book on torture called the Malleus Maleficarum that was handed out to all the Catholic priests who would take people into the interrogation chambers and test them to see if they were witches or not, according to this book. And if the people didn't pass the test, they were burned at the stake. This is a horrible, horrible torture record that now, unfortunately, puts a cloud over Northwestern Europe. But it was, I assure you, imported from Rome, who had to learn it from the Middle East, which is as far as the Roman Empire extended. Because Rome, although they were pretty civilized people, I would say, just taking a look at the writings of their philosophers and their senators, had such a massive empire that they learned that if you wanted to control the animal races, you had to do it in the way that the animal potentates had controlled their people, which was with torture. So by extending out into the Middle East, the good white people of ancient Greece and ancient Rome learned that torture was sometimes necessary. And just about the time of Christ, which was when the Romans finally drove the Jews completely out of Israel, they did have this influx of Jews who had converted to Christianity who were threatening the Roman Empire right directly in Rome, and they threw the Christians to the lions, and they instituted the law of torture. And then as soon as the Romans were converted to Christianity, they just continued in their usual way of controlling the people with torture. Only the rhetoric had changed, that's all. Now, if you didn't believe in Jesus, you got burned at the stake. And these burnings are a terrible blight on the record of white humanity. But you will find them quoted in the ancient texts of the ancient Israelites, where Yahweh tells his children that the judges must have the discretion to burn various felons, especially men who have sex with their daughters. Such men were to be burned at the stake. And I don't personally agree with torture for any reason, although I do believe in capital punishment. But you have to admit that when our American photographers went to Saudi Arabia, they could leave their cameras right in this public square and nothing would ever get stolen, because these animals were so perfectly controlled by the threat of having their hands cut off. So I understand that this is an issue that has different points of view on different sides. However, it is my personal opinion that when Jesus refused to allow the men to stone Mary Magdalene to death because she was caught being a prostitute, I think he was probably telling us what I already thought anyway, which is that there really is never an excuse to stone anyone to death or to torture them to death. But as I have to admit, the subject is off, still open to discussion. The point I'm bringing up about torture today is that different races and cultures and countries torture differently. Each country, each group of people has their own method of torture. And when you look at the earmarks of the torture you're looking at, you can pretty much decide who it is that's doing the torturing, who the perpetrator is. As I stated earlier, the white race has the best torture record. And in America, we even have the Sixth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment, which was a reaction to the European burnings for religious purposes. And Americans just decided they weren't going to have anything to do with torture at all. For one thing, it doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't give you any valuable information, because the victim immediately, as soon as you apply pain, tells the inquisitor whatever the inquisitor wants to hear. And then it's just a sort of a test in how can you find out if it's true. Maybe you will get some information that's valuable. But it's been pretty much decided by Americans before Bush came into power that there was no reason for torture at all. And I believe it is against the Geneva Convention. However, people do torture, and when they get pushed to the point where they're in a war situation like in Vietnam, when our men were seeing their men being tortured in hideous ways, they did answer back. And I think that there's an argument for that in times of war, but very limited degree. Again, getting back to my point, however, it's that you can see who the perpetrator is by looking at the form of torture. And again, I repeat, the more evolved races use much less torture because they don't need it to solve their problems, and they don't enjoy it because they're busy creating beautiful cities. As you go down the scale to the more animalistic races, you find at the very bottom these Mayans and these sub-Saharan Negroes and these American Indians who are torturing just for the pure fun of it. And then that opens the door to a difficult discussion, which is, why would anyone enjoy torturing anyone? What kind of a strange appetite is this? But going on more to, again, I'm trying to show you how to identify groups of people by the way they torture. You will learn that the brutal, stupid, just-for-pleasure torture that you see among the American Indians and the Sub-Saharan Negroes and the Mayans, where they just like to poke and torture and burn and prick their enemies, just, it seems to me because they like to watch them twitch. This is the lowest form of race, and this is the worst kind of torture. But then you see the Jewish form of torture, and you see a whole nother type of torture. You see a sexual torture. This is not common in the Sub-Saharan Negroes or the Mayans or the American Indians. It is found in other Mid-Eastern countries. They have a method of torture that's supposed to completely annihilate the personality within 5 minutes, where they call it the black slave, where they put a hot rod up a man's anus, and that can completely destroy his personality. But again, it's still not what we see with the Jew. And the Jew does this very odd kind of torture where you actually have to wonder if they're getting sexual perversion pleasure out of it. It's another thing. It's a thing all of its own. And we saw it, we had read about it when we read the Palestinian accounts of what the Jews do to the Palestinian male adolescents, how they torture them sexually. And of course, everybody's horrified that any group of people can be this low. But we actually got a look at it when we saw those pictures of Abu Ghraib. And we saw how those heaps of people had all been piled on each other in a very humiliating and sexual manner. And little Captain England had her thumb up saying, "Did I do a good job, Chief?" to the people in charge of her. That very odd, strange, sexual type of torture is the thing how they've filth-invaded us and have grabbed a hold of the minds of our youth, the young men and women, soldiers and are manifesting their special hideous type of sexual torture, then we can go up the chain of command and go backwards in our line of reasoning and find out how long has this been going on, and we find the torture memos written by Gonzalez and you, which says that it's okay to torture, and we see the journalist going right up to Gonzalez and saying, do you?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, for some reason, we lost the connection with Mona Montgomery. Not certain why that happened. Nothing went wrong on this end. So please stand by while we reestablish the connection and continue with the Hollow Hoax. Well, apparently Mona doesn't realize that she's been disconnected. And when we tried to get through to her, her call went right to voicemail. So please bear with it while we try to get through this mess and get her program back on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, we're continuing to try to reconnect to Mona Montgomery. I apologize for this. Please stand by.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry about that little break. Anyway, I was just saying that if you want to tell people who's in control, point out the fingerprints that are on the torture of our own people are doing against the enemy, and show them how this only the Jews have this type of torture in their history. You can read the reports by the Palestinian adolescent males, and you'll see that it's exactly the same form of torture. And that's how you can prove that the Jews have got a hold of our military and our youth. Another good question that you can always tell people to ask themselves is, who are you not allowed to criticize? That is your master. And we all know that we're not allowed to criticize the Jew. And we know that there's only one group of people that have a word to fit if you dare to criticize them, and that's anti-Semitism. You don't hear anti-Swedishism or anti-Brazilianism or anti-Indianism or anti-Negroism. It's only anti-Semitism, and of course that means Jews. That doesn't mean the real Semitic races. So these are the ways that you prove who's in control and who you have to resist. Now, I wanted to reiterate what Terrible Tommy was telling the young men in the white movement, and that's to grow your hair out and hide your tattoos. I have not had the courage to say this to the young men in the movement and even some of the young women, because I know it will be experienced as a criticism, and nobody likes to be criticized. But think of what you're doing when you shave your beautiful, shiny Anglo-Saxon hair. Do you realize that you are the only race of people that has such beautiful, shiny, soft, silky hair? Your hair is a primary sexual, a primary sexual characteristic, but it isn't. It's a primary racial characteristic. And it's so important that in the old pictures, when artists did pictures of good people doing nice things for people and they put a halo around their head, that's because the artist was trying to identify that special silky shiny luster that comes only from Anglo-Saxon hair. I think you're pleasing the Jew intensely when you shave your head and then nobody can see that beautiful halo that God gave you. Why would you want to obliterate from yourself such an important identifying characteristic as your beautiful silky shiny hair? So please stop doing that. Don't grow it long. We don't want you looking like girls, because men have better looking hair than girls. And it's been always considered a point of chivalry for a man not to parade his beautiful hair around a woman. Did you know that men have more and more shiny and more longer and more hair than women? It's amazing, isn't it? I think that's why the hippies liked growing out their hair, because it was an interesting thing to see all these beautiful manes of Anglo-Saxon hair everywhere. But it is more... it's more considered more chivalrous not to make a big deal out of the fact that God gave you better hair than us girls, and keep it nice and trim. But don't trim it off. Don't take it off. That's a terrible thing to do. Why would you erase such a beautiful mark that God gave you to distinguish yourself from the animal races? Think that we've been breeding for probably a million years just for that specific quality. And I wanted to talk to you about this new lawsuit that the Jews in Germany have filed against Esprit. Oh, no, it's not a lawsuit. They are actually under a criminal investigation for using the swastika design on their leather buttons. Did you see that? You can take a look at one of these buttons if you want to go to my website at www.nukeisraelnow.com. You won't believe it. These buttons have been traditionally worn with tweed jackets for hundreds of years. There's nothing even vaguely resembling a swastika, excepting that there's an X going through the middle of this leather button. But the prosecutor says that they are considering raising charges on the grounds of use of the insignia of prohibited organizations. So remember, every time you wear a swastika or sing the Horst Wessel song that I open my show up with, you are making the Jews angry, because these are insignia of prohibited organizations, like white people. Now, let's talk about Congressman James Traficant, who is actually a political prisoner. He's been put in jail for 6 years by the Congress for bribery and other such shadow charges that nobody can prove, and they only level on people that they don't like. And he was actually taken out of Congress and is presently in jail. It's interesting to notice that the only member of Congress who did not vote to expel him was Gary Condit, another victim of the shadow government. You may remember that Gary Condit was pulled down, and another good-looking white man, by the way, was kicked out of office for having that affair with that Jewish girl, whose name escapes me at the moment, and she later was found dead in the thicket near Washington, D.C. It was a terrible, terrible story. And we saw yet another white Anglo-Saxon guy getting kicked out of Congress for under strange circumstances. He was the only member of Congress who had the courage not to vote to expel Traficant, because he knew that the shadow government was at work. Now, what were the real things that people didn't like about Traficant? He was a loud critic of NASA and the CIA and the IRS. He undoubtedly knew all about the Federal Reserve banking system and how the CIA and the FBI have been infiltrated by Jews. In fact, he seems to have kind of a thing against Jews, if that's, we're using word so much. It's not about having a thing against Jews. It's having the courage to oppose the Jews who persecute Anglo-Saxons unfairly for crimes they never committed in Germany, since we now know there were no gas chambers and that the 6 million figure is just made up out of some kind of occult mysticism, and that Hitler never wanted to exterminate the Jews at all. He just wanted to get them out of Germany. So the Jews are still going around persecuting all these people and putting people in jail that are in their 80s because they were guards at German camps. It's all just completely ridiculous. And they continue to persecute our people. And this man, James Traficant, opposed it. In fact, he went so far as to actually defend a man named John DeManjew, who was stripped of his United States citizenship in December of 2005 for having been a guard in German concentration camps. Now, it just so happens that most of the guards in the German concentration camps were just young men, because all the older men were out fighting wars. So they were the most innocent people in the world. Plus, these concentration camps had the highest rating by the International Red Cross of any prisoner of war camp. So these men, these guards, were certainly not guilty of any crime, and yet this man, John DeManjew, was kicked out of our country because he was a guard in a German concentration camp. And the Jews sent him over to Israel, and what Traficant did was he followed the story and was able to prove that some of the statements had been made against John DeManjew were incorrect. For instance, they called him the Angel of Death, and James Traficant went to the trouble of proving who the Angel of Death really was, that this guy was not the guy, and Israel had to let the guy go. Even Israel, in the face of the material that Traficant gave them, had to let this political prisoner go. But we still don't allow him in our country. He's still not allowed to be in the United States. So you can imagine how AIPAC felt about Traficant after he made such an issue of not allowing them to persecute another one of our people. Another thing that might have gotten Traficant in trouble with the powers that be is that he refused to accept the stated reason for the bombing of the Pan-American Flight 101 over Scotland, Lockerbie, Scotland, in 1973, which we were told was done by the Libyans. Well, Traficant said that he thought the CIA and the Justice Department were withholding the truth, and he told Congress in 1996 that he believed there was a joint British-U.S. cover-up over the Lockerbie bombing. So here he ran in trouble with the CIA. Then he told Congress in 1993 that the United States is in bankruptcy. That's over 20 years ago. He just told his fellow congressmen, the United States is in bankruptcy. Quote, the receivers of the United States bankruptcy are the international bankers via the United Nations, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating within a de facto status in name only, under emergency war powers, unquote. So this was a very hip guy in Congress, and he was sentenced to 8 years in prison for bribery, tax evasion, and racketeering in 2002. Which brings to mind Proverbs 17:15, he that justifieth the wicked, and he that condemneth the just, even they both are abomination to the Lord. So we are seeing good people condemned and bad people going free, and we can rest assured that God is not pleased when he sees this kind of abomination. Which brings to mind another innocent German prison camp guard, the beautiful Irma Greve, who was a guard at Auschwitz and whose ghost still walks the camp. At least when last seen, she was in crematory, her ghost, but they had to demolish the building because the people that were running the Auschwitz Museum were so afraid of the ghost that they first demanded that the boards and windows be boarded up and the doors locked, and then that wasn't enough. They still got some kind of apparition from this beautiful young woman, so they completely tore the building down. Now, this woman is just the prettiest thing you've ever seen. and she was about 21 when the war was over and they captured her. She was the most hated SS guard in the history of Auschwitz because she was so young and so beautiful and so perky, and everybody loved her. So you can imagine how the Jewesses felt about that. She came to the Auschwitz camp from a small village in Rechen at the age of 18, and because of her intelligence and diligence, she was given the enormous responsibility of managing Crematorium 3, called Crema 3. Now, you need to understand what crematoriums are, because you're going to have to respond to people. When you say there were no gas chambers, they will say, we saw the crematorium. And you need to be able to distinguish, when you're discussing this with people, between a gas chamber and a crematorium. Of course, there were crematoriums. Every large institution has crematoriums. For example, every hospital, every large hospital in every city has a crematorium at the bottom or somewhere in the hospital. That's how you get rid of bodies when they die, in the most sanitary manner. Auschwitz had 200,000 inmates, of which 66,000 perished, which is an enormous death rate due to the fact that there was typhus running rampant. And you can imagine, if you were sent to a camp where you knew that you had a 1 in 3 chance of dying, how frightened you'd be of the camp. The Jews had every right to be terrified of Auschwitz because they were dying like flies of typhus, not because of gas chambers. So when you point out that there were no gas chambers and then you'll be responded to with, but I've seen pictures of the crematoriums. Well, that's right. They did have crematoriums. And crematoriums are a big responsibility, and this beautiful young 18-year-old was given authority over Crema 3. She was very popular with Dr. Joseph Mengele and Camp Commandant Kramer. Joseph Mengele was a really nice man. I know you've all heard this terrible story of the evil Nazi doctors, most especially Joseph Mengele, the Mengelian experiments. Everybody's heard of them. Well, actually, he was a great humanitarian. He was a heroic Air Force pilot, and I believe he crashed or at least got injured in some manner so that he could no longer fly as a pilot, and he was given authority over the entire Auschwitz prison of 200 inmates, which is a huge responsibility. He was the chief doctor. And, like other doctors at that time throughout the world, he was studying twins. That's where we get our best information about genetics. When you take twins and you monitor them through their stages of growth, like babyhood, infancy, toddler, etc., you can notice what are the differences and what are the things that stay the same, and you can start to draw conclusions about genetics. Because, for instance, we've seen cases where biologically identical twins are separated at birth, and yet later the doctors will find them when they're in their 40s, and they'll be smoking the same cigar, wearing the same kind of plaid shirt, and using the same gestures and mannerisms. So there's a tremendous amount of importance to learn in the study of genetics. And of course, as white racists, we're particularly interested in genetics because our genetics are being threatened. Any race that wants to kill us off doesn't have to do anything more than infiltrate and marry us. And because our genes are recessive, our children turn out not to be white. They take on the characteristics of the darker races. So genetics is a very, very important course to study, and it's especially important for a race with recessive genes like the white race in the interests of survival. Joseph Mengele was studying genetics, and it is true that whenever he saw identical twins, he gave them a special benefit of coming up to the hospital, and he'd take their measurements and give them little reading and writing tests and give them little candies, and those were Joseph Mengele's twins. The infamous twin experiments that you have always heard of were nothing more than the usual monitoring of the development of identical twins in order to study genetics. Well, you can imagine how the Jews are going to feel anytime anyone studies genetics. They're going to be very, very threatened because their genetics don't stand up to scrutiny. The Jews, being the most heavily mongrelized group of people in the world, also have the highest number of genetic diseases. There are over 250 genetic diseases that are found only in Jews, as opposed to the white race that is a pure race and does not have one single genetic disease specific only to white people. The best thing they can come up with is that more white people get cystic fibrosis than any other group of people, but other groups of people also get cystic fibrosis. So the white man has no genetic diseases. The black man has two that assist him in fighting malaria. One is Ebola, and one is, I can never remember the name of it, that's Jewish. But anyway, there's two diseases that blacks get, and I have never studied yellow race. So I'm showing you how important it is for the races to stay pure, because the more you mongrelize, the more genetic abnormalities become hidden in the DNA, and now we here in America are paying for the research and development of cures for over 250 genetic diseases, specific only to Jews, whereas we have none of our own. So how is that for overburdening the white man? So here's Dr. Mengele busily studying genetics by monitoring twins, and he's, of course, crazy about little Irma Grease, and all the Jewesses, who are not very pretty women, start hysterically leveling accusations against Irma Grease because she was known as the angel because of her beauty. And she had beautiful blonde hair that she often wore braided and sometimes in ringlets, which is pretty nice. And they made her look like a halo. It looked like a halo around her, and she had beautiful blue eyes and a dazzling complexion. She denied all of the absurd charges that were leveled against her, like that she was involving herself in sadistic sexual acts. She was beating prisoners to death, this little girl. And the fact was, she had a little cellophane whip that she had made to sting the legs and the arms of the Jewesses if they wouldn't get into line, because her job was to make them all march in unison this way and that way. And they often wouldn't, and so she snapped them with her little cellophane whip, which went down in history as this huge horse whip. And here's little Emma Grease with her little boots. She's very cute, as she can be, in a plaid skirt and a little vest and a tailored blouse. And she has her little cellophane whip, and she's whipping all of these women into shape, probably, I don't know how many, probably 100 at a time, and they're all doing what she says because she's in charge and she's a good little girl. So they testified that she wore jack boots, that she had a plated cellophane whip, which is true, and a pistol, and that she was always accompanied by a vicious dog. Well, she wasn't accompanied by a vicious dog anywhere at any time, and her jack boots were just the appropriate attire for a young lady in Germany's cold climate. She testified honestly that she was innocent of all charges, and in spite of this, she was sentenced to be hung. Now, here is the transcript from the 53-day trial that they subjected little Irma to. Question, did you carry a stick at Auschwitz? Answer, yes, an ordinary walking stick. Question, did you carry a whip at Auschwitz? Answer, yes, made of cellophane in the weaving factory in the camp. And in case you guys, everyone doesn't know what cellophane is, because it was pretty popular during the 50s, it's kind of like the tinsel that you hang on Christmas trees. It's a form of, it's like saran wrap. So we're not kidding when we say it's no big deal to have a cellophane whip. She says, yes, made out of cellophane in the weaving factory in the camp. It was a very light whip, but if I hit somebody with it, it would hurt. After 8 days, Commandant Kramer prohibited whips, but we nevertheless went on using them. I never carried a rubber truncheon. So here she is. She's being tried for her life. She's very frightened, and she's telling the truth. Question, you affected heavy top boots, and you liked to walk around with a revolver strapped on your waist and a whip in your hand, did you not? Answer, I did not like it. Question, you thought it very clever to have a whip made in the factory, and even when the commandant told you to stop using it, you went on, did you not? Answer, yes. Now, you see how this man put two questions to her, and she answered one correctly, and it made it look like she was answering the other. So that's one of the ways they tricked her. And, of course, she had no decent defense. Well, she had a pretty good defense, but he didn't object at this point when he should have. Okay, and it says, question, what was this whip really made of? Answer, cellophane paper plated like a pigtail. It was translucent like white glass. Now listen to how it makes, he turns it into a horse whip. Question, the type of whip you would use for a horse? Answer, yes. Yes, that is probably true. That's what little 18-year-old Irma Grease probably did use, a little cellophane whip on a horse, because that's what little girls do. They don't like to whip horses with horse whips. So she said, yes, it was the type I would use for a horse. Question, then most of these prisoners who said they saw you riding, carrying a riding whip were not far wrong, were they? Well, what is she going to say? She says, no, they were not wrong. But they were not right either. But the guy doesn't bother. You know, see how he's making her look bad, purposely twisting her statement to make her look much worse than she is. Question, did the other offer Shannon have these whips made too? Answer, no. Question, it was just your bright idea? Answer, yes. Question, in Liger C, you used to carry a walking stick too, and sometimes you beat people with the whip, and sometimes with the stick? Answer, yes. So they convicted her on that testimony, even though at another time she totally denied many of the charges. And, of course, we all know that this was not the only innocent person who was sentenced to hang after the Auschwitz trials, because none of the people were guilty of the crimes they were accused of. And, in fact, many of the prisoners were beaten with, when they were prisoners, their teeth were knocked out with iron knuckles, and their families threatened. And by the time they got into their trial, they were in no condition to defend themselves. So they try to obliterate the beauty of Irma Geese on the internet, and there's a photograph of her being tried with a very ugly face. Obviously, the photographer has obliterated her beautiful face. But if you do any kind of searching, you'll see what an amazingly cute little girl she was. And she was called the Sturmnicht, meaning little singer, because she liked to sing German folk ballads at night in her cell. And she even hummed these tunes as she walked the gallows. So here's a little girl, young girl, beautiful. I mean, truly a beauty. She could have been a movie star easily. And she likes folk songs. How can you hate a girl like that? How could they have done something like that to her? And in fact, two hangmen refused to hang her. One of them went home and committed suicide, knowing, rather than obey the order to hang her. He shot himself. Then they went and they got the ugliest Jew they could find in the whole city. His name was Samuel Lutz Heim, a local Jewish hangman, and he was chosen. And if you go to my site, you'll see this is not a man any woman would want to have touch her. He's just amazingly ugly, with the great big full lower lip and the huge Jewish nose and a bald head and a mean, mean expression. So she, of course, reacted emotionally when he came to hang her, not only because he was going to hang her, but because she didn't want to be touched by this brute. So he slapped her repeatedly after she became violent and said she didn't want this man touching her in her completely unguarded, she was 21 at this time, young girl reactions that she would have to being touched by such a brute. He slapped her repeatedly until he was able to force the rope over her neck. And then this hideous Jew botched the hanging job so that Miss Grease's neck did not snap, but she was left hanging until she finally suffocated as she struggled at the end of the rope for 3 minutes. This is what this Jewish race has in for us, the people they can never be, the beautiful, intelligent, gentle, and amusing white race. This is how they are. This is how they feel. And this is what they did to Irma Grace. Immigrant. So she has since then become a folk legend in Germany, and she has been said to be seen in the crematory, and there's a picture of her. Actually, you can actually see a picture of the ghost, this beautiful young woman standing right between the two crematoriums, waiting until the truth is found out, that there were no gas chambers and the German people are completely innocent of all charges. So I think that's a beautiful story. the Jew-controlled German government that if she did, she would be arrested. So all we have is this one black and white picture taken 40 years ago of beautiful Irma Gries waiting for the truth to come out about the Holocaust, because she wants to vindicate herself and her German people. Little footnote, after the fall of the Berlin Wall, Jew Heim Lansky and the team of four researchers dared to probe the building but could not last the night. The building had to be resealed again by outside workers because none of the Auschwitz crew would touch the job, and since then the building has been destroyed. Now, the reason, one of the tie-ins to that story is that we had a young Mormon American soldier kill herself, I believe it was this week, September 15th. She killed herself rather than be pulled into the Jew-orchestrated torture of the Iraqis. And I think she sort of reverberates to the Irma Gries story, where Irma's hangman would rather shoot themselves than hang an innocent woman. Here we have Alyssa Peterson shooting herself rather than be involved in these horrible tortures that we're now learning about in Iraq. And there's a beautiful poem by Richard Jones of Swansea, Wales, UK, that he wrote for her because she refused to cooperate with the cage and the waterboarding and the toast rack and stress positions and wishbones and things like that. And he's just saying how sad it is that she had to witness this and how sad it is that she killed herself. She was a devout Mormon and could not be compelled to do the hideous things that our Jew-controlled military wanted her to do. And we have a couple of other female heroines. A Muslim woman named Hanadi Taysir Jaradat, on October 4th, 2003, made of herself a terrorist, the first one that I know of that actually took place in Israel. We always hear the Israelis talking about the terrorists, the suicide bombers, bombing the Israelis, but we're never told that it's only done in Palestine. It's only done in retaliation for the Israeli encroachments on Palestinian land. Finally, in 2003, a young lawyer, a female lawyer, did go over to Haifa and bomb a few people with her own body. And I think that took tremendous courage, and I understand why she did it. She just figured, if they're going to say that we're bombing them in Israel, I think it's time for us to start bombing them in Israel. And she took herself and her law degree and put her little shroud around her head and bombed a few people in Haifa and let the Jews see that they're not just going to continue to take it lying down. Now, who else do we know of? Who is another beautiful female heroine that we know of? Is the beautiful Rachel Corrie, a peace activist that died bravely for her beliefs. She stood up in front of a house that the Israelis were about to bulldoze, because that's what they do all the time. They go out and they bulldoze down the houses of the Palestinians, and then they build up great big skyscrapers for themselves, and they move in, and they call them settlements. Settlements is sort of a euphemism, because these are huge buildings that they're building up on Palestinian land. But of course, the first thing is to flatten out the land, so they take their bulldozers and they bulldoze down the Palestinian's house, and they say they did it because he was a terrorist. Well, we know that some of our own people, some of our own men from the White Power group have gone to Palestine and Israel. We had a report from one of them, and he said that he saw two Israeli soldiers molesting or harassing an innocent Palestinian youth. They put him on his knees, they put his hands behind his back, they shot him in the head, and they said that's proof that he's a terrorist, the fact that we shot them. So Rachel Corrie probably didn't know what she was going into when she just figured nobody would ever bulldoze down a house if a woman stood up between them and the house, because nobody could be that cruel and inhuman. But so that's what she did, and they went right over her with the bulldozer, and then they backed up the bulldozer, and they went right over her again, tore her face up, and she died in the hospital. So here are some stories of courage of people who have gone all the way to even killing themselves rather than engage in torture when they're asked to by these inhuman governments. And then by, in strong opposition to this, sharp contrast to this type of woman, we see that last week a very, very Jewish-looking woman has been made bishop of the Episcopalian Church. And it says in the Bible at Mark 13:14, but when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, parentheses, let him that readeth understand, close parentheses, then let them be in Judea, let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains. And I believe that when we're seeing Jewesses being welcomed into the Anglican Church as bishops, we are seeing the abomination of desolation standing where it ought not. But this is a very interesting little verse because it says, let him that readeth understand. So you just have to decide for yourself if that's how you see it. But I certainly would say that an unusually unattractive Jewess dressed up in bishop's robe would be an excellent example of the abomination of desolation standing where it ought not. And it's interesting, especially to contrast this woman with the wonderful heroines that I've spoken of earlier, to see the contrast. So we'll talk a little bit about this little American girl who killed herself, Elisa Peterson. She was said by her friends to be, she died of her own hand after objecting to interrogation methods used on prisoners. She was an Army specialist. She was an Arabic-speaking interrogator. She also spoke other languages. And she was only the third American woman killed in Iraq, so her suicide death drew a lot of attention. She objected to the interrogation techniques used on prisoners. She refused to participate after only 2 nights working in the unit known as the Cage. Army spokespersons for her unit have refused to describe the interrogation techniques Elisa objected to, and they say all records of these techniques have now been destroyed. The way this story came out was that a particularly energetic news journalist, started making inquiries when he found out about the suicide and wanted to find out more about it, and he actually got to the point of talking to some of these people who knew her, and that's how he discovered that all of the records of the techniques had been destroyed. After she refused to interrogate, she was assigned to the base gate where she monitored Iraqi guards, and she was sent to suicide prevention training. But on the night of September 15, 2003, I have here, Army investigators concluded she shot herself and killed herself with her service rifle. But the reason the story is coming out now, 2 years later, or 3 years later, is because it took this long for the journalist to get it into the news. So Kevin Elston is this journalist, and he discovered that the suicide note found on her body suggested that she had found it ironic that suicide prevention training had taught her how to commit suicide. So he filed another Freedom of Information Act asking for the actual note. And it goes on to say that she was a genuine, sincere, and sweet-natured person. And I'll read you the poem that this guy from East Wales wrote for her, called Elisa Peterson. What did the cage hear ripped from pregnant pauses? What does waterboarding signify? What is the toast rack? The wishbone? A stress position? Just words wrenched out of context? What did the cage see when others chose to face the other way? A lone woman, uniformed, crisp, upright, her bright eyes brimful, her lips silently mouthing the word, no. At what point did cold steel begin to bleed? Concrete grow slippery and red, the M16 at her side fall silent. What did the cage feel to see her wasted there, while high above the flag fluttered feebly, for the fallen defiant, defiled. when the cages have all emptied, when the interpreters have long since fled, she stands guard for all of us, in the company of a swelling legion of the dead. That's by Richard Jones of Swansea, Wales, UK. So here we have again a young girl, just like Irma Grease, who people feel are watching over us until we put an end to torture and deceit. And of course, this is what will happen. As the Bible tells us, it's not to be taken too literally, but basically, you have to admit, if we are going to evolve into a better race of people, if we're going to stay alive at all, if the human race is going to survive, it's going to have to evolve past savagery and torture and lies and deceit. And this is why people who dedicate themselves to salvation are really dedicating themselves to survival techniques that will carry the race forward and into the next stage, whatever that might be. So that's pretty much what I had to tell you, and I have not much more to say. If somebody wants to call me up, there's time. The telephone number is area code 201-484-7809. And I did want to bring your attention to something on my website that I hope you'll all listen to at www.nukeisraelnow.com. If you go into the archives for tonight's show, you'll see a button there marked Stat Miller Turner. I want you to hear Stat Miller. He is so jealous of Hal Turner, it's reeking. In fact, one of the points I wanted to make is that I find these people who are accusing good truth tellers of being liars and being agents for the FBI are just jealous. The people who really are aware of these problems don't bother talking about it. We warn each other, we know they're there. But when you hear second-rate journalists calling first-rate journalists agents, you're looking at pure jealousy. Also, check out Eric Hufschmidt. He's not a white racist, but he's coming up with state-of-the-art information every day. He's interviewing Eustace Mullins, and he's on the top of the Christopher Bolin case. And you're getting a lot of criticism. He's being targeted with a lot of criticism on the stormfront.org by the so-called white patriots. Because he's Jewish, they say, or because he's not white. Well, it's true, he's not a white racist, he's not a white power person, but his information is so compelling that it makes me suspicious when white racists say that this man should be, he should not be accepted by white people because he doesn't support the white race, when it's so obvious that they just don't want you to look at his information. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who tells the truth is okay in my book, and he's way ahead of the pack. At the same time, we see another strange phenomenon in Willis Carto, once just a fabulous hero of the white race and of the 9/11 truth movement. He's been at the head of American Renaissance for American Free Press, sorry, for decades, and he's suffered an awful lot of persecution by the Jews. It does appear to me that he's now being infiltrated by Jews, and so watch that. As this man gets old, you'll probably see him being surrounded and taken over, and it's very possible that his wonderful organization will turn into a Jewish organization. So, other than that, nothing to talk about except Hal Turner himself. Are we going to support him? Are we going to let him stand alone? Are we going to just watch him burn out and die in front of us? This is a man who needs our support. He can't do it alone, and we can't be so selfish that we would allow him to. Give him your money. Give him your tithes. See if it isn't true what it says in the Bible. Prove me, and I will open the doors of heaven upon you. I dare you. Give to Hal Turner, and then call in with your testimonies as how God has made himself known to you. Thank you very, very much for listening to this light night edition of The Hula Hoops.
You're listening to the Turner Radio Network.